Peter, whatever we do, don't piss off Ashley.
Podcast, where we take a hard look at the element that makes or breaks games, the music. I'm Peter Thomas, and I'm joined by my co-host, Cody Haltom. We are happy to have you along with us on our journey through Donkey Kong Country. What's going on, Cody?
Going on, man. How you doing?
I am good. I've been thinking about this episode pretty much since we finished the last one.
I almost wanted to do it immediately.
It's just one of those games, man. I've been thrilled about it. I've got a lot of fond memories of it. I feel like our history section of memories we could share it's far too short to cover all the good times I've had with it.
Oh yeah, for sure. Especially, I mean, this game came out so many times that it's really been a staple throughout both of our lives. Because I know, like, I was young whenever this came out. And so pretty much a lot of times when it would come out again, I would pick it up for a little bit. You know, it's just one of those games that's so easy to go back to.
Yeah. I mean, this game, it was originally released in the United States on November 25th, 1994, which I think that made me, what, like seven? And the European edition came a day before that, which is interesting because that's not normally common. And the Japanese edition came a day after. It went on to sell over 8 million cartridges, which is pretty impressive given the time period and, you know, distributions and things like that at that time. But as you were saying, it would later end up being released on the Game Boy Color in 2000, Game Boy Advance in 2003, Wii Virtual Console in 2006, Wii U Virtual Console in 2014, new Nintendo 3DS and Virtual Console in 2016, and then finally on the SNES Classic in 2018. It was the first game in the series and the first departure from the traditional game, where you still played as Mario, who tried saving the girl from the angry gorilla at the top of the scaffolding. This actually was the first game by Rare for Nintendo, which ended up being a great partnership and seeing two sequels made on pretty much all those platforms I had mentioned before. So, yeah, lots and lots of renditions of this game, and for good reason. I mean, I could hand this to anybody, a gamer, a non-gamer. If you play a certain style of games and don't like platformers or anything like that, and I can guarantee that you're going to find some enjoyment out of it. It's just it's a blast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, here's the premise of the game, because on the last episode, we did admittedly a deep game. There's no depth to this game. You're running to the right and a bunch of crocodiles ended up stealing some bananas from some gorillas for no apparent reason. That's all the story to this entire game. And I know because I was thinking that there might be, you know, because back in the day we had the instruction manuals that typically had like a bit more of a backstory. No, that's all I got. That's all this game is. But for some reason, there's just something really, really special. I'd say more special than some like Mario World, for example, with Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah. The game is incredibly charming. And being that it's such an old game and one that's kind of been ingrained in both of our gaming histories, why don't you tell me a little bit about your first experiences? I want to hear, what was it like whenever you had first dabbled in the world of Donkey Kong?
This is a time that I'm not going to forget. It was 1995. So not too long after the game came out, I had just had surgery. I had like my tonsils removed, so it wasn't anything major. But my grandparents wanted to cheer me up, and they just probably went to Walmart and were like, hey, what's a popular new game? Donkey Kong? All right, we'll send them that. So I got it, and I remember holding the box, and naturally when you're a kid, ooh, a new game. But this one looked different. You know, like the box art on it was more detailed than some of the other games that were out at the time. So because I had just had surgery, we grew up on a street that had 11 boys and 2 girls, which is a lot. But naturally, the parents would always bring the kids over to say, hey, hope you feel better, you know, so on and so forth. And then they would always stop because I'd be playing Donkey Kong. And they're like, wait, what is this? You know, and then a week later, the obligatory visits ended up turning into all of us fighting over who got to be Diddy Kong.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel like that was probably a battle in everybody's household. I don't know why Diddy Kong was as popular as he was, if it was the sweet little hat, if it was his little nimble moves or anything like that. But yeah, it was always a battle for us, too, as far as that goes. And, you know, something I didn't mention in the game history section is that this was also the first time we got to experience, and I say this very, very loosely, but 3D graphics. This game really pushed the Super Nintendo to its limits. I have no clue how they rendered those sprites to look as detailed as they did. But I mean, even just sitting there, you know, the idle animations between Donkey and Diddy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was like they sat there and they studied monkeys just to make this game.
Right. Like there was so much attention to detail in the graphics, even in just in the artwork, not like on the manual or anything like that, but like the matte painting that's in the background, you know, where we see the layeredness, that quote unquote 3D that you're talking about. There are things that they didn't have to do and little things that just make this game such a classic and honestly so replayable.
Right. Yeah. My history was pretty similar. So I was a lot younger when this came around, and we used to rent video games all the time from a company called Hollywood Video. Rest in peace, Hollywood Video. It's no longer in service anymore. But yeah, we did that constantly before I ever ended up owning my own copy. And this was one of the few games that I have very fond memories of my family getting around the Super Nintendo and pairing up, usually be like me and my mom versus my brother and my dad. And we would see how far, you know, each team could make it. We just had an absolute blast through it. It was one of those things where it defined for us couch co-op. When I think of a cooperative game or even a friendly competitive game, right? Because they had the two modes, competitive and the non-competitive two-player mode. This is what I think of. Yeah, we just, you know, would sit there. We'd hand the controller back and forth. You know, one of us would be Donkey Kong. One of us would be Diddy. And that would be how we enjoyed our time through it. So many, many hours, you know, digging up all the different hidden secret barrels that were everywhere and finding all the bonus tokens so you can play the bonus stages with all the crazy animals that they had allied up. Yeah, it was just a very fond memories of this game all around.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up secrets because I don't know why, but one of my friends eventually bought like the Primo guide or something like that. He didn't even own the game. I don't know why he had the guide, but he did. And we used that thing to find every secret in the game. And then something happened. You know, the secret in Minecart Carnage where you miss that first jump and you fall into the barrel that's down there? That wasn't in the guide. This version of this guide. And that blew our young minds. We then spent mornings after mornings before school jumping to our desks trying to find every secret that we could. Because yeah, we were like, what? This shouldn't be a thing, but it was.
Right. I feel like they invented the codes for like 50 lives and things like that just because kids would spend life after life jumping off of cliffs and just looking for any secret that they could find.
Oh, yeah. We were convinced that there's like a certain rock pattern where you can throw a barrel into the wall. There might be a TNT barrel at the very end of the game, and we try to run it all the way back just to throw it at one wall to see if it would do something. Be like, all right, well, no, not to that one, but what about the next one? Because we don't know. And that was just hours. It became an obsession, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, it encouraged you to explore and look for things without forcing you to do so, because you can absolutely play through this game, beat it with a, you know, 37% or whatever it is, and not have touched a single secret barrel, and life is good. You still enjoyed the crap out of this game and you never missed anything substantial, but the secrets just added so much more. It really was remarkable.
Yeah, I completely agree. And on the soundtrack side of things, I'm going to say it. This is almost a perfect soundtrack.
I'm right there with you. I think that we talked about in Final Fantasy X on episode one, that had, what'd you say, somewhere in the neighborhood of 90 tracks on it. While it was outstanding, I would not have rated it a perfect soundtrack by any stretch. This has less than half of that. Actually, I think it's a third.
Yeah, there's only 20-something tracks, and then it comes in at under an hour.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, every single song is pure perfection.
Absolutely. So since I started off last week, why don't you start off this week with what is your number five?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm happy to. So my number five song on the DKC soundtrack is Treetop Rock, which is, it's very different from a lot of the ones that I've put on my list. It doesn't really fit kind of the flow of what I have here. Like, I think all the other songs, they have like a specific feeling that gets invoked when you listen to them. Treetop Rock does not. What I like about Treetop Rock is it's actually one of the faster songs on the track. It might be the fastest if you're just counting purely beats per minute. What it does well is it works really, really well with the stage itself. So for those of you who may not know, this stage is set up inside of a bunch of trees, and you're on these like wooden platforms, and there is this music playing, and the way that the enemies are all set up is they are set up in giant lines. And one of the mechanics in the game is that if you hit the Y button, you do a roll as Donkey Kong or a cartwheel as Diddy Kong. When you do that, you will strike an enemy and continue to strike them until you run out of enemies to hit. And as you do that, you pick up speed and go really, really fast. It's not Sonic fast by any stretch of the imagination, but it's fast for this game. This particular stage is built on that. It's like it wants you to keep chaining together these rolls and hope to God that you do not miss these jumps, because you can and will miss these jumps.
Absolutely. One of the notes I had down for this is it's a really mischievous sounding track. It wouldn't be out of place if you honestly put it over like an episode of Tom and Jerry or something like that. I think that the marimba on this track, which is the wooden xylophone, is heavily prevalent on this, is key to it. That's what gives it so much of its tone and flavor. It really sets the tone because, like you said, the levels that this song is in can be hectic. You know, it's a bunch of weird jumps like that, or perfect barrel presses, you know, jump launching from one to another, and all the barrels are moving around. So no, it is on your list. It's not the oddest pick, but it is a very, very good track to me.
Yeah, I actually like your description of it being hectic. I think that's that is like the perfect word. If I were to describe the song with the stage and what they expect of you, That was what I would pick. Hectic.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it is. It just is a really hectic track. I think the only other track that is a bit more hectic than that would be Minecart Carnage.
Yeah. Okay, so Cody, tell me about your number five on your list.
My number five is Life in the Mines. Peter, kind of like you, I feel like this is an odd track for us to pull. But there's something about the depth of this track. The metallic clanking really sets the tone that you're in a mine. The repeating pattern really makes me think about pickaxes, you know, mining away at the limestone. There's a flute that comes in at a certain point and helps it stay light, but doesn't necessarily make it a happy track, you know. Honestly, I find the flute quite depressing. The flute really gives it a vibe of longing to be able to leave the environment, but just not being able to escape. Does that make sense?
Yeah, melancholy, I think, is the term we'd be using there. is a beautifully haunting track. And I can't remember, Life in the Mines, that is not a cart track, right? That is the one where you're actually exploring on foot. Am I remembering that right?
You are.
I remember there being a lot of, and I think they use it a few times. One of the ones that stands out the most is the red and the green lights for those little like boogeymen guys. I don't actually know the names of them.
Yeah, those guys look like they're actually almost like claymation when they're running around. And
yeah,
something I will note, this is not that track, actually. That is a separate track. The name escapes me, but this is a different one. It's a different just underground level that they just kind of threw in there. It's not used much. I think it's only used probably 3 times in the entire game, but the detail of the scoring of it is what made me want to put it on my list.
Gotcha. So then if that's not the one, it must be the Claptrap one that this one comes from.
God, I wish I still had my notes.
I know. It's like one of those ones. It's like I probably should have done a refresher. It's been a little while since I played this game. So like some of my memories kind of bunch together. You know, there are obviously some that stand out more than others. I do know the track well. I'm just having a hard time placing exactly what we were doing when we heard it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So what's your number 4?
So my number 4 is the Credits Concerto. Something that I really enjoy about this particular track is the fact that it's very rewarding. I feel like nowadays when you get to the end credits of a game, there's not really a whole lot. It sounds a lot like a cinema track now. There's an orchestra playing and it's just kind of like, yeah, you finished the game. Good job on you. But this game, I mean, it feels like when we talk about the story, you know, the story was Donkey Kong had his bananas taken from by a bunch of crocodiles. And we are on this adventure to get them back. I've never felt more satisfied with getting some bananas back for a monkey or a gorilla, yeah, rather, than I did after I heard this track. There's a lot of depth behind it as far as making you feel very accomplished for overcoming all obstacles, beating the final boss, and getting to the credit roll. It feels great. It's a warm and fuzzy track to listen to and look back on and say like, yeah, I did that. That's another accomplishment in my belt.
I think you summed it up perfectly when you said warm, because that really is what it is. We have happy tracks, we have sad tracks, exciting tracks, but this one is the only one that distinctly feels warm. After you beat the game, you're sitting there, you got all your bananas, you're right, it's just a really great track. I like some of the techno beats that are in there, just light, you know, peppered throughout a bit, the guitar and some of the softer notes. It never really wants to be something exciting. It's just a really peaceful kind of track.
Very much so. It feels really good all the way through. And that's the thing, you know, you mentioned that guitar. And the funny thing is there's not a whole lot of guitar in it. It's just like this one little like slide across the notes that plays through, but it adds so much to it. So yeah. Why don't you tell me about your number 4?
My number 4 is as basic as it gets. It's the main theme. But the main theme, now, for those who haven't played the game, it only appears in the menu and when you just start up the game. And it's a scene where we see Donkey Kong, or Cranky Kong, actually. He's sitting there with an old record player, and we're hearing some really old music. Not ancient or anything like that, but just some NES-era tunes coming from this. All of a sudden, some drums kick in, an inverse Donkey Kong with his boombox. And all of a sudden, we realize that this is not the game like its predecessor. This is something completely new. The transition is great. It's a literal transition. It catches you off guard, and you know that you're about to really play something special.
Admittedly, I almost put this on my list. I was so close, so close. I just for the sake of having more music on this podcast, I'm glad I didn't. But man, I was very close because it is the definition of that old stay off my lawn kind of thing. You know, you got Cranky Kong. You know, one of the things that you hadn't noted was that, you know, Cranky's playing on like this. He's wheeling one of those old, what are they, like gramophones or something like that?
Right.
And,
yes.
You know, he's tapping his foot to this beat. And it is. It's the old Donkey Kong Country theme right before you start a new game. The old Donkey Kong theme when you start a new game and are about to start climbing all that scaffolding I was talking about.
Is that what that is?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the old theme, that little starting piece.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, like you said, Donkey Kong busts out of the side with his boombox and his fresh dance moves. I remember getting so much joy out of seeing that. And this was long before, I guess, an interesting fact for me is that I had never played the original Donkey Kong before Donkey Kong Country. I kind of retrofitted it back and played it much later in my life. So I didn't understand how much of a nod to the old games this was until that point. I mean, even what they're standing on old red scaffolding. So I think it's also a note or I guess a friendly nod to say that Cranky Kong might have been the angry gorilla that was capturing damsels and maidens and things like that, that Mario was trying to save all those years back when.
No, he was actually. That's canon. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, so that's a legit thing, and he just passed his name down, and now he's the cranky old man, so he's Cranky Kong. And honestly, it wasn't until I sat down to take notes for this podcast that I even realized the transition. Because like you, I hadn't played it before I got this game, the original, I mean. So for me to notice and actually realize that this was a literal transition, passing of the torch from the old to the new, the scaffolding fades away, is replaced by this beautiful jungle environment. That's not something that even dawned on me until the show. I wouldn't have known that.
Right. Yeah. It's so funny because all through the game, Cranky is constantly scolding Donkey Kong, telling him how much better he could do, how he could beat a stage faster than he could, and so on and so forth. Just bragging and boasting. At the end of that theme, he actually throws a barrel of TNT at
Yes, he does.
Which is, you know, a little comic relief, but it's still charming all the same.
Cranky has the most dialogue in this game.
Yeah, I want to say he's, what, one of three people that speaks? Four, maybe?
I would say four if you include K. Rool.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So four people who talk in this entire game. Yeah, and I think he does. He has the most dialogue written, and it's 90% sassing Donkey Kong.
That's all it is. There's no point to go visit him, you know, on your journey. He's a fun character. What about your number three, speaking of characters that talk in this game?
That's right. So my number three is Funky's Fugue. I had a hard time with this one because I really wanted to rate it higher. I can't, in good faith, do so because there's obviously tracks that are just much better. But man, is this song so good. So Funky Kong is your fast travel basically through the different worlds to and from, I guess it's DKC Island. I'm not really sure what the name of it is. Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's Donkey Kong Country Island.
So he is the one who takes you, you know, back and forth through the different worlds if you need to revisit some or anything like that. Usually, at least for me anyways, I used him. If I found him before I found a Candy Kong save barrel, I would use him to jump back, a save on a previous world where she was unlocked, and then come back you know, and continue along. If you want to talk about people's themes who really epitomize what they are as a person, Funky's Fugue is that.
Oh, dear God, yes.
It just defines his character. If you were a blind man playing this game and somebody was like, okay, here's the song for this person, can you tell me what he looks like? You're going to be like, oh, yeah, this dude wears sunglasses, has a bandana, is likely ripped to hell in like a white tank top, and he's probably surfing.
You put this on your list and it gave me such joy to see. I was like, I'm so glad one of us had the balls to put it on there, because it is such a weird track, and weird in the best way possible. Going back and listening to it, I don't think I, because it was the fast travel machine, I don't think I ever listened to the full track until just the other day when I was doing my review for this thing. So I didn't realize how towards the end it goes like full blown Mortal Kombat theme.
Yeah,
at the end of this thing.
Right?
Yeah, I didn't know that. I was never in the thing for more than 20 seconds, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's also one of the first tracks I know, or that I remember hearing coming from the Super Nintendo, that had a almost like an audible voice. So the like the hi-yahs and things like that that came out of it. There was not a lot of that. I want to say that putting those kinds of sounds in a game took up a lot of space, and they were hard to do with just a sound chip that was meant to just kind of put out your beeps and boops. So hearing a voice over the track was also really unique and kind of really stuck out to me.
And when you do hear that voice, that's when the whole track changes. Something I want to talk about, we don't really have room to talk about it on any of our tracks coming up, but something that's noteworthy about these tracks is that these are tracks that are really hard to kind of take notes for, because about every 30 seconds or so, the entire tone of the track changes.
Yes.
And there's so many layers to it that some songs can be two or three. And this is another one that changes, you know, about 30 seconds in when you hear that vocal cue. It goes from being one track to this completely different, just exciting rocker track that just I'm so happy to see on the list.
Right. Speaking of tracks that I'm happy to see on the list, your number three is one of those tracks. Please tell me.
Oh, yes. It is Gangplank Galleon. Now, this is the K. Rool boss fight. So we've gone on an incredible journey to this point, and it starts out very pirate themed. Like, it is, you are on a pirate ship. You know exactly where you are. It's really thick. They lay it on. And then the drums kick in. And then the track starts to change, kind of like I mentioned before. And then the guitar hits. And this track just rocks. There's no more to it, because whenever you're going around and you're fighting K. Rool, it is the perfect kind of tone setting for this battle that you're having with this giant crocodile who is on a pirate ship with a musket firing cannonballs at you. It's totally nonsensical, but it is just an amazing track and an awesome moment in the game.
mentioned something interesting about the tracks in general is that a lot of them, if you're good at the game or you die a lot, one of the two, you don't typically hear a whole lot of the track. Gangplank Galleon is a little different because that boss fight is long. There are multiple parts to fighting King K. Rool. If you play the stage, I guess, as it was intended, typically the track starts morphing right around the times when he's changing the way that he fights. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of elements that bring this track together and what really make it stand out. It really is incredible. And like you said, it starts off very lighthearted, almost like a pirate shanty.
Very much so.
You know, percussion kicks in and then the guitar. And then all of a sudden you go from a pirate shanty to like throwing up the horns and headbanging the whole time. It's like, you know what? I'm just going to pause it and listen to this for a little while.
It explains why it's so high on my list, right?
Yeah. No, and with good reason, because this was another one off of your list where I had almost stuck it on as well. Again, for the sake of the podcast, I'm glad that we didn't, but it was close. That's a hard one not to love.
Yeah, it's really weird because I was looking at your list and I was looking at it and I was like, oh, well, shit, you took so many of the good ones already. I was like, way to give me a slim pickings on what to pick. But honestly, like I said, the whole soundtrack is great. So what's your number two?
So my number two fits very much in line with kind of my personal tastes for an aesthetic. So most of the people who know me, most of my friends, family, and things like that, and you, of course, know that I'm very big into like the steampunk aesthetic. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy that look, that feel. I like the environment of it. And Fear Factory gives me that feeling. That is my number two. It's one of those songs where I could not remember for the life of me where it was in the game.
Really?
Yeah, I couldn't. I was like sitting there thinking, and stages from Donkey Kong Country 3 were coming in my head. Stages from Donkey Kong Country 2 were coming in my head. Donkey Kong Country 1, not a clue. I was like drawing a complete blank. I know, it's insane, but I love this track. It's so good. And I think that's probably why I don't remember the stage all that well. I would play this game and get to this point just to hear this song because it felt that good to me. There's so much going on. It kind of reminds me a little bit of what you were saying in like Life of the Mines, where they added some, you know, clanking and things like that, mm-hmm. that made it feel like you were in a real factory. And one of the things that, so it's a little bit faster of a track than most of the other ones. Not as fast as Treetop Rock, but it's still pretty quick paced. It reminds me of what it would be like if I was working in like one of these factories for K. Rool.
This is a very interesting track. And now that you bring it up, no, it's about as on brand PT6 as I can put on this list, probably from this soundtrack. It's very technological sounding, you know, like late 80s, early techno, that kind of thing. It's so different than anything else that is on this track or on the soundtrack. It's so, so unique. But yeah, it is a factory level. This is a late game level that if you're not really good at the game, you're not going to hear this track. And so even, you know, in some of the other iterations where I might have picked up and played through the first two worlds or something like that, I hadn't heard this track too much. just because I never really made it that far too often in the game, except for when I was a kid. But going back and listening to it again, it's another one of those excellent immersive world building tracks.
And maybe you actually called it. Maybe that was the real reason. It's not so much that I couldn't place the stage. Maybe I just never got there. secret's out. I've actually never beaten Donkey Kong Country. And
really?
No, of course I have.
I was about to say.
It's so funny, though, because I was like, you were saying it was like a late game stage and things like that. And I'm just like, oh, maybe that's why. No.
I couldn't explain it.
No, I've beaten it quite a few times. It's one of those staples of mine that I try and pick up. I'm long overdue, obviously, at this point, but it's one of those ones I try and pick up and play at least like once a year just to run down memory lane. So, yeah.
It took me a whole lot that this game wasn't part of the Nintendo Switch Online collection.
Yeah, very surprising. I don't know why that is, but I don't understand a lot of their decisions when it comes to the virtual console. I'm sure that's a topic that we could explore for an hour on it.
Let's not do that.
But I believe we are on your number two now.
Yeah, we are, which is kind of a weird departure from my last couple of picks, but it is Ice Cave Chant. Spoilers, this takes place in an ice cave. And that needs to be noted because you can tell by listening to this track. The notes just dance around you, kind of like shimmering lights reflecting off of ice crystals that you might find down there. The marimba and the xylophone really drive this track home. It's just a fun track with some light, almost like call and answer moments between the two of them. There are parts of this track that remind me of slipping around on the ice, which is all the level is. This track really just puts a smile on my face, and I can't really describe why.
I was very close to putting either this one or the first snowy one. I think it's called Glacial something or other.
Yeah.
I wanted to put them on, but I feel like the entire snowy world traumatized me as a kid. And I feel like that's why they didn't get a fair shot on my list.
I can understand why.
You aren't wrong, though. When you said that it takes place inside of a cave, one of the cool features I liked about the cool features.
One of us is a dad, man. Can you tell?
I know. I was like, geez, these dad jokes, man, they just never stop. One of the things I really enjoyed about the way that this track sounds is that it almost sounds like it's echoey. It's very subtle, and they do it just enough that it adds appeal to the track without being like overpowering and saying like, hey, we're inside of a cave, you know. They do a really good job of adding just these little touches to all the tracks, really, but this one in particular, that offer, like you said, that world building feel to it. So when you're in this cave full of ice, you know it hands down. The music complements it ever so well.
Oh, yeah. You never have to question it.
No, not at all. No. And now,
yeah,
the grand number one. And I didn't call out your name, Cody, and Cody, you didn't ask me for mine because our number ones are the same.
Yes.
But for good reason. My goodness.
This happened way sooner than I thought it would, but I was so glad to see your number one.
I said this off air, but I am not surprised in the fact that this song is so good in so many ways. And if it's not everybody's number ones, I would be utterly shocked, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to do the honors?
Sure. It's Aquatic Ambiance. This is a weird track in its beauty, because in game, for those who aren't DKC familiar, this is water levels. This is all this track is. Water levels in video games are notorious for being the banes of our existence. There's nothing we really hate more than a water level. I always look forward to the water levels in Donkey Kong Country because of this track.
Show notes on this particular track, and I wanted to write notes on mine and literally write same because I mean you captured it perfectly. Water levels are usually one of those ones. I mean, think about Super Mario water levels. They're awful. You don't ever want to be there. They're atrocious. You die a lot, things like that. You think about the water temple. Everybody loves the Ocarina of Time water temple.
Fuck that place.
Right. But this is different. This track, it's serene, it's calming. Even though there are angry fish and sharks and things like that trying to bite your butt the whole way through, you can't feel angry about it because it's just, again, with the dad jokes, but it's very fluid.
It absolutely is. Like, I will put this track on to this day to help me, or to help put me to sleep, because that's how tranquil it is. It is relaxing. It is soothing in an environment that is anything but. I don't know why it is as beautiful as it is, or why they chose to go with a track like this for an environment like that. But man, am I glad they did, because you hear this music and from the very first 2 seconds, you know you're underwater.
Yeah, I mean, there's no questioning about it. It's like that across most of the tracks. They did a great job with saying, like, here's where the player is going to be. Here's what the player is going to be doing. Build a track that fits that, you know. And I think this is probably a safe spot to say that David Wise is a god.
Isn't he just?
I cannot get over, you know, he's on Twitter. And I've tweeted him a few times about how much I adore his music and what he does and things like that. But man, there's no doubt about it. Like, we will be covering all three Donkey Kong Country games. And it's for tracks like these. There's so much about them that makes you feel very much alive in a place that's all digital. If you didn't know any better, you'd think that these places truly did exist somewhere. And maybe they do. Who knows?
Who knows? It's something I wanted to bring up because you brought up David Wise. He is one of the two composers that's on this. A lot of people don't know this. He still works in games today, and his most recent works can be heard on the Yooka-Laylee series.
Yeah, I read that pre-show and I was blown away. I had no idea he was on and writing for Yooka-Laylee. So that was really cool. Because I believe Playtonic was a bunch of the old Rareheads, right? That went over to make their own game through Kickstarter, was it?
I'm not sure what they did, but they made a Banjo-Kazooie clone. That's all Yooka-Laylee is.
Yeah.
Have you played that, by the way?
I have. Not all the way through, but I have played Yooka-Laylee. We actually, I want to say we did a stream where it was my wife who was playing through it.
You did. I remember that now. Yeah. I remember because I remember some of the jokes. Okay.
Right. You mentioned two composers, David Wise being one. Who was the other on Donkey Kong Country?
Oh, hold on. It's in my notes. I'm going to butcher her name, though.
It's all right. I'm sure she'll forgive us.
Evelyn Fisher.
Oh, okay.
Is gotcha. The other. And she doesn't do anything anymore. I think she actually does one of the later Donkey Kong Country games. I think David Wise does one and two, but I'm not sure.
Gotcha. And it's worth repeating. They're both musical gods because everything about these tracks has just been absolutely wonderful. I mean, even just re-listening to it for this show, I must have done it like three or four more times because it's just that good.
Yeah, it's good. It's fun all the way through. There's honestly, if we're being fully transparent, we would probably put all of these on a list. So many of them are just interchangeable, except for number one, obviously, which we mutually agree on. But yeah. Any of the other tracks you could have put on here and I would be like, dude, I get it.
Right. I know it's I said I read your list and I was like, you know, at least two, possibly three of those songs could have put on my list very easily. But I tried to really pick ones that kind of spoke to me. I'm glad to see that we both have the same feeling about the track as we the tracks rather as we listen through them, but both kind of got different feelings as we went along. It was good to see for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's why I was looking forward to this so much. It's not because it's one of my favorite games or anything. It's just because this game is nothing but joy. Like, there's no quote unquote dark tones or anything like that. I mean, there are levels that are darker, but I just knew that recording this episode was going to be a fun ride for both of us, a trip down memory lane and to a soundtrack that I haven't listened to in way too long.
Right. I know. I think once we're done recording, I think I'm going to hop off and play some Donkey Kong Country and go relive it again. But
I don't blame you. Not at all.
Well, we're at the end of our show. This one actually went a lot more quickly than I expected it to. I think that we're a little shy on time, but that's okay. I mean, it's one of those games where I think that we're both very excited to prune through our tracks, and hopefully the music will help fill in a little bit and get you guys really in the mood. And if you've never played Donkey Kong Country, I keep forgetting to add the country. I should separate the two.
Why, Peter? Why you do this?
I know. They're two separate games. If you've never played Donkey Kong Country, though, I urge you to give it a try. I mean, there are dozens of ways to have a copy of this game. And those ways are all legal. I'm sure there are many illegal ways to do so as well.
Oh, yes.
So there's no excuse. If you enjoyed listening to the songs as we played them throughout this episode, I would highly encourage you to do so. Any final thoughts from you, Cody? Anything you want to wrap up with? Yeah,
a couple of things. First off, we forgot to mention, this is how we know each other, is this series.
That's right. We should have mentioned that from the start.
We are professionals, Peter.
Yes, we are.
yeah, this is the only reason that Peter and I even know each other was because back in the day, God, we should have mentioned this when we were going through our history on this, because this is literally our history. I had just gotten internet and I had just gotten an Xbox One and I didn't know what Twitch was. I thought it was the weirdest, stupidest place, and I kept going back to it. I stumbled across this guy and this girl randomly playing through Donkey Kong Country Returns, which is a later game that I'm sure that we'll get to. It's not on the list yet. And that was Peter.
Yeah, we were, I had just actually started dating, she was my girlfriend then, but yeah, I just started dating her fairly recently. I want to say it was within a year. I told her about this thing I'd been doing and I said, you know, at some point in time, if you ever want to come on and do some gaming with us, I'd love to have you on, that kind of thing. And we ended up settling on Donkey Kong Country Returns, which was I want to say it was a good game to play, but probably bad for us.
It's a bad co-op game to play, man. You picked a bad one there.
Yeah, so I guess it's probably worth noting that my wife is not much of a gamer. She does find the rare gem here and there that she will obsess over. Donkey Kong Country is not one of them. Yeah, we went back and forth about it. A lot of bickering. You know, it plays a little differently too. Donkey Kong Country Returns plays as more of like a side-by-side co-op as opposed to a tag team co-op that the original.
That's where you messed up right there.
Yeah. And I think that's it. When you're relying on somebody to be able to do the things that you can do as a gamer of, at the time, 29, 28 years, and you're asking, you know, your girlfriend to do so, and she's not really a gamer, it's bound to lead to some tension, we'll put it.
Yeah.
You popped in the stream. You were giving us tips and tricks along the way and just enjoying the moment. So is it safe to say that I am the reason you stayed on Twitch?
Actually, yeah. Yeah, and that's not a compliment.
I'm so because sorry. I didn't get it. I am so sorry it was me.
No, because here's the thing about your streams and everything is that they were so chill, so relaxed. And not just that, but the community you had, everyone knew each other. We were all friends. We could all give each other shit. But if someone else came in and started being mean or something like that, we were, whoa, hey, that's not this type of community. No, it was the only place that I had kind of popped into where whoever was playing the game was talking directly to me. So I was like, this guy seems cool. I'll check him out. And I love this game that he's playing. So yeah, I think I'll stick around for a bit.
I mean, it's awesome to hear. I joke about it and say like, sorry, it was me, but
yeah.
You know, that's obviously, it was what I worked towards. And that's really what the focus was always meant to be. From it, I've built some great friendships, yourself included. I mean, that's the whole reason why you're here. I knew pretty early on, you and I jived really well. We play a lot of games and analyze them, evaluate them in very similar lights. It was a no-brainer when I asked you to be here, so I'm glad that you are.
And look at us now.
Everything, yeah, I know.
In the books.
Now we're here.
The only other thing that I wanted to do is thank everyone who has listened so far. We've gotten a lot of feedback and a lot of listens. We really appreciate it. Every time you guys reach out, it means a lot to us. Personally, I try to respond to everybody who does. So just thank you for all the support that you've given us so far.
Yeah. I'm just going to add a little onto that just because I've been, you know, watching the numbers and things like that. I don't know what the typical launch is like for a podcast from somebody who's not a celebrity or who's not popular or has a previous thing going on for them. You know, we kind of just started this out of the blue as just something fun to do and a passion project between the two of us. But the numbers that I'm seeing as far as listenership goes, you guys hanging out. I mean, we got our first couple of reviews on Apple Podcasts and things like that.
Cool.
You guys have all rated it really high. And even the personal feedback, whether it's Twitter, Discord, what have you, you guys have all reached out and said the things that we wanted to hear, which is you've never really heard a podcast like this and it's enjoyable to listen to from beginning to end. If those aren't the two things that we're striving for, then we don't want to be doing this because that's what we were hoping to accomplish. We wanted you to sit down and have it feel like you were bullshitting with a couple of friends about video game music, just like we did back in the day. The numbers, at least as far as I'm concerned, look fantastic. You guys are really doing an awesome job with supporting. If you want to continue to support, by all means, give the podcast a subscribe on whatever listening platform. We're on like 7 or 8 different platforms at this point, but the major ones, you know, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and then the one we're natively hosted on anchor.fm. We're on all those locations. So subscribe and favorite the podcast wherever you listen to it. And if you're feeling so inclined, leave a review. Let people know what you thought about it, how you felt when you listened to it, any feedback. We're always open to changing anything that seems fitting for the podcast itself. So just a little tidbit there. So Cody, thank you so much again for being here for episode 2. We made it through another one. Looking forward to the rest. I know we've got a bunch lined up, maybe not necessarily hashed out the order just yet, but I'm looking forward to our next one.
As am I, buddy. It's been fun.
thank you to everybody who's listening. I really appreciate it. I hope to see you guys all soon. Take care, and we'll catch you for the next one.